Welcome to LenRock. I'm Keith Johnson, chairman of the LenRock Foundation. I'll be your narrator, and you'll be hearing from Brother Art Gensler and from brothers
Henry W. Jones.
I'm Jim Ballou.
Colin Tate.
Craig Fanning.
Leonard Johnson.
George Castleman.
I'm Stuart Weller.
I'm Larry Phillips.
Chris Smith.
Victor Lopez.
My name is Ian Wright.
John Abe.
Keenan Weatherford.
Peter Kelly.
Michael DeLucia.
James Bohr.
Mike McLaughlin.
The Foundation's purpose is to preserve this beautiful and historic mansion so the traditions of our beloved fraternity can continue. Ezra Cornell was a Quaker farm boy from upstate New York who struck it rich in the telegraph business as a partner of Samuel F. B. Morse. His personal tastes were plain, but when it came time for him to build a home in Ithaca, it's said that his colleague Andrew Dixon White persuaded him to spare no expense. Cornell imported craftsmen, woodworkers, stone carvers, and the like from England, Scotland, Ireland, Germany, Italy, and elsewhere in Europe. Construction began in the late 1860s, but was not completed until a year after Cornell died in 1874. The architects are generally thought to be Nichols and Brown of Albany, who had earlier designed Cascadilla Hall and possibly Morrill Hall as well. Once committed, Cornell paid close attention to detail. White suggested the motto, true and firm, a translation of the German treu und fest, that is carved above the front entrance. At one point, White was visiting the site and came upon Cornell chewing out a craftsman whose work he found inadequate. True and firm indeed, White muttered. More likely, true and obstinate. Despite that, or perhaps because of it, Ezra built a masterpiece.
I thought, pretty nice place. Who gets to live in Ezra Cornell's mansion?
It's a castle, not something that you'd normally be handed over to a fraternity.
LenRock is by far the most beautiful house on campus, and Ezra Cornell built it intending it to be that way. It really is breathtaking when you walk into the foyer of the house and see, you know, the main staircase winding up and 20-foot ceilings and chandeliers. And you look out and you could see the entire Ithacan Valley and all the way up the lake, and you could see the clock tower from the roof. It was built to be beautiful, and after 100 years, it really hasn't lost that much of its beauty.
Before rushing in the winter of 1955, Alden Hathaway, who was a year ahead of me, later became the Episcopal Bishop of Pittsburgh. He and I took down every single one of those spikes, rinsed them, cleaned them in a solution of ammonia and water, and put them back up there. It took us, I think, one day for each of the two chandeliers, and it was a bonding experience, let me tell you. The library, it's a nice, relatively small room. There'd be a big silver urn with coffee, and we'd all come in and have coffee and chat after dinner. The only telephone in the house used to be in that cupboard over there. I remember hearing Craig Fanning, who was a year behind me, playing the Moonlight Sonata on that piano. Delta Phi, one of the three oldest college fraternities, came to Cornell in 1891, 23 years after the university opened its doors. The Pi chapter settled first at the foot of the State Street Hill, and later at 515 Stewart Avenue, just north of the bridge over Cascadilla Creek. In 1911, Pi of Delta Phi had the foresight and good fortune to acquire Ezra Cornell's splendid mansion from his daughters. It would not have happened without George S. Tarbell, Sr., a member of the first pledge class and an Ithaca lawyer. Tarbell not only arranged a mortgage on LenRock,
that also transferred Delta Phi's Stewart Avenue property to the Cornell daughters as part of the deal. His son, G. Schuyler Tarbell Jr., Pi 1922, became a distinguished president of the Cornell Delta Phi Association. Lenrock was added to the National Register of Historic Places in 1980.
The facade lighting was actually at the request of the city of Ithaca. And this is a piece of Ithaca history that they wanted to show the house off.
The purchase brought an eloquent letter of congratulation from Andrew D. White. He ended with this: "From the great quadrangle of the university, the music of the chimes comes down from the library tower upon the whole place, morning, noon, and evening, as a benediction. I am glad to see a house so dear to me in the possession of so distinguished a fraternity as yours. I trust that the occupation of a place hallowed by so many cherished memories will bring a blessing on all who enter it."
At Cornell, we're not known by just Delta Phi, but Lenrock. Freshman year, I never called my dorm home, but after joining Lenrock, I was very comfortable saying that I'm going home.
Lenrock is a beautiful house to live in, and immediately became our home, and that's how we thought of it, not just as a fraternity, but as truly a home, a place we looked forward to going to when we got done with classes, and sometimes a place we dreaded to leave when it was time to go.
I felt that the fraternity was really my first true home, and that I'd moved around a lot when I was a kid. And I remember telling my mom once when I had to head back to the fraternity that it was time for me to head home. And it was kind of a bittersweet moment for her. She was sad that I referred to Lenrock as my home, but happy that I had found such a place where I really enjoyed being with the people.
Andrew D. White's wish has been fulfilled. Lenrock has indeed blessed all who have entered it. From the beginning, the fraternity has had a special character. The brothers encouraged both academic achievement and serious participation in extracurricular activities. A number of Delta Phis served in World War I, and at least one of them, Morgan Smiley Baldwin, Pi 1911, was killed in action in France. The grand staircase connecting Cornell Avenue with University Avenue honors his memory. During World War II, the house was taken over by the university as a residence for about 50 naval officer candidates. In 1946, Ed Johnson, Pi 1941, single-handedly restarted the chapter with a large group of pledges.
It was the low-key and the warmth of Delta Phi, along with the maturity of the upperclassmen, many of whom were returning veterans from World War II. The returning veterans were really a stabilizing influence. At 8 o'clock, there was no noise on the second floor. They took study seriously. They took academics seriously.
My brother's Jim Fanning, and he was three classes ahead of me. I chose Delta Phi because my brother dirty rushed me and exerted undue influence, and so instead of going to Phi Gam, I went to Delta Phi.
We started off, each of us were given a name. It was composed of a multitude of scientific-like words put together that we had to memorize and be prepared to recite whenever a upperclassman requested it, whether it was in the house or on the hill. Mine was Babluimont, beta-hydroxyl, phenylpropionic, bronchiospasm, blepharoptosis.
I remember when we were new pledges at Delta Phi, every class had its own table. There were four tables in the dining room. I had red leather chairs, and we were to rotate at our position as the head of the table. I was the first alphabetically, so I was the head of the table the first week that we were pledged. We had roast beef, ham, wonderful dinners the first week, but it was my job as the head of the table to carve, and I didn't know beans about carving anything. It was one of the, my father did. He was very good at home, but I had never had to do it before. Well, I had to learn, and I made kind of a mess of the beautiful roasts that came out of the kitchen.
Every year, the pledge class has to do a project for the house, and again, this is quite literally a way of giving back to Lenrock, is helping make it look better, taking something that's fallen apart and fixing it. And we were rather ambitious in my class, and we had one pledge class member who was particularly adept as a woodworker. And so we all rallied around him to tear out a rooms full of benches in the basement and create wooden booths downstairs. And so those have persisted to this day. And so for me, that's a real point of pride. And for our class, that was something where we were literally able to etch our names into a part of the house.
Our pledge project was the worst pledge project ever, but it happens to be the wooden sign that we installed in 1992 that welcomes visitors to Lenrock. And I think that since it was the worst pledge project ever, at least the older brothers had always said they're going to replace that sign constantly. And I've heard, you know, within 3 or 4 years, people wanted to replace that sign. But I believe it's still the sign 20 years later that welcomes people to Lenrock at the end of the driveway.
Well, during the initiation, there was a fellow down in one of the cisterns, which was off the chapter room. And when the initiate made the right response, he'd say, "Let the keeper of the great seal record it." And it would echo in that cistern. It was quite impressive.
In general, you know, we were looking for people who were pretty well-rounded. It was important to us that we had as much representation in the house as we could to match what was on campus. We tried carefully not to become known as an engineering house or only a hotel school house or so forth. We wanted to spread around a little bit so we could be attractive to a lot of the campus. And I think we were looking for gentlemen that had a lot of different interests and participated in different activities as well. But all that aside, it was mostly about how well did we get along with the people who wanted to join the house, and could we see ourselves living with them and becoming friends with them and doing things with them.
There was no one type of a person that was in the house. I think that's part of the attraction of it. You know, there's no mold to fit or to not fit into. It was pretty accepting of everybody. You know, I think, you had to have a certain amount of social skills to sell yourself into the house during the pledging process.
I think my pledge class is phenomenal. I think we are so diverse. You know, if you told me that I was going to be living with an engineer my sophomore year, I would have laughed. I said I wouldn't even have known an engineer.
I didn't join fraternity freshman year, but I remember vividly going down to Delta Phi during rush sophomore year and being captivated by the house, approaching it for the first time. I got the tour along with two of my friends who ended up joining with me, Chris Smith and Victor Lopez. So we all decided to rush and join together, and as other alumni may tell you, it was a bit of a down point in the cycle for the fraternity. We were a class of five joining the house, and you know, the alumni were concerned and actually considered shutting down the house for a year or two. And you know, to me, it was a great opportunity to almost effect a turnaround, to be part of a institution that had a lot of history and had a lot of potential and was a wonderful place to live, and a good core group of guys, but also to try and, you know, bring more vitality to the house and build, you know, build back the fraternity standing on the hill. And so not only did we, you know, have a plan to do this together, Chris, Victor, and I, but we also felt it was important to connect with the alumni. And I actually went down to New York City and met with the alumni board. And, you know, they assured me, much as an investor would in a company, that they'd give us their backing.
My pledge class, I still see and go on vacations with six of my fraternity brothers and their wives. And there was a core of us that are very, very close.
Here I am, I'm almost 40 years old. And my best friends today that I see on a regular basis are my fraternity brothers. You know, I have other friends, but my fraternity brothers are really the standard by which I hold, you know, potential new friends.
Living in the house is an adventure. You're living with 26 very like-minded individuals who all joined the house for similar reasons to you, yet everyone else has their own personality. And it's really interesting because this group of people has to coexist in a communal living and make an entire house run. We have to clean it up together, you know, we eat together, we do all these things together. And a lot of these people would have never been friends had they not joined the same fraternity.
So a lot of times when the weather's nice, a lot of brothers would just, you know, shoot an email and say, hey, pick up football, 4:30, be there. And just a great time for people to, you know, unwind after a long week, a long day of school, and just have fun in the backyard.
So it's great to have that base of people you know you can turn to, no matter what.
We have lived up to the highest ideals of what it means to be brotherly.
We're such a diverse group of people that all still come together to form one brotherhood. I don't understand how it works, but I think it's a pretty magical thing.
For me, Lenrock was a haven of civility and comradeship amid all the pressures of classes and labs and prelims and term papers and a heavy schedule downtown at the Cornell Daily Sun. Years later, in the mid-1990s, I spent some time around Lenrock and found that while some things change, the undergraduates seem to have just as much fun and enjoy each other's company just as much as we did. And they got better grades.
You've shared common bonds, not only from the traditions, the initiation rituals, the things that go on in chapter meetings or the events like our haunted house that have persisted for many years, but in saying, I slept in this room, or I had dinner here every night for 3 years, and sharing stories about cooks and broken stoves or things that have changed over time. We installed apartments on the third floor, which used to be a ballroom, and before that was the dormer. And so there are those shared experiences, and then the things that have changed so dramatically that people may not even be aware of, that they can still talk about and connect with, and gets you to really understand that at our heart, we're all brothers.
We had a remarkably formal approach to living at Lenrock. We had the coat and tie rule on campus. We had suits on Wednesday night and Sunday lunch. We had candlelight dining, each class at one of the four tables in the beautiful dining room.
I remember Gabe, our house manager, and his rockabye red wine that he used to make, our beds.
We slept on the third floor in a dorm situation. Snow and the would come whirling through, but it was great. Just a great, great time. There are so many happy memories.
The windows were open 365 days a year, and I remember stepping out of bed into a couple 3 inches of snow, and that'll wake you up.
My sophomore year, somehow I was the last one in to pick their spot where they were going to sleep. So of course I got the spot right next to the window with the northwest exposure from Cougar Lake, and the wind came right whipping down there. So my mother took pity on me and gave me this wonderful down puff that I put all over the bottom of the bed. And at least a dozen times that first winter when I was in the house, I'd wake up and there would be snow all over the foot of my bed. and I have never slept better in my life than I did in that dorm.
All the beds were on the third floor in the great big ballroom, which had no partitions except one side room. And so everybody slept in the main part. But if you snored too loud, you got put over in the snorer's dorm. You were voted over there. So the big change, I don't know what happened, was when they brought the beds downstairs. So when the sexual revolution came along, a big dorm like that wasn't very useful.
I slept next to Jim Goodwillie in the Tenderloin, and Goodwillie snored something awful. And so I rigged up a broom handle, lashed it to the head of my bed, and a rope over to his bedspring. And if he got to sleep before I did, and he was snoring and I couldn't get to sleep, I'd reach up and yank the thing, wake him up, tell him to shut up, and see if I could beat him back to sleep.
Faculty eggnog was held once a year. The faculty enjoyed coming down, probably partially because it was Lenrock, and some of them had never been in it. It was made in a huge cauldron and stirred with an old rake. There was lots of bourbon in it. We made it 3 days in advance so that it aged. The eggs cooked. We had crates of eggs and gallons of heavy cream. There was always some left over. They always made more than we could consume it, but it was good for days, for weeks. It had so much bourbon in it, it would last forever.
One of the groups that we formed, which was really all of our brotherhood, was what we called the Delta Phi Literary Society. So we began a series of meetings where we would invite a professor to dinner. And I don't think this was an unusual practice in years past, but certainly wasn't something that was common in the late 1980s.
We felt it was good to bring back those traditions. We did it in our way. I didn't have a script, and doing things like bring back the faculty tea or the Christmas eggnog, which is another party we threw. We organized it the way we thought made sense to organize it, and we carried on the tradition in our way.
Milk punch, of course, was the big thing on spring weekend. We get this huge milk can and put all this nasty stuff in the can, and the big party was outdoors. On we'd have a band on one of the porticos outside, and the more adventuresome people, we'd water down the slope, and the more adventuresome people would do a mudslide.
In, I think it was probably my junior year, the Delta Phi Lawn Party was reinstituted, and we had the Spencer Davis Group, which is a fairly well-known group, play on our back lawn.
Occasionally there was always a DJ, and the third floor there was a ballroom, so that was kind of the dance floor, and it was a pretty good size room, probably 60 feet by 30 feet. Have a DJ station up there. Also in the basement there was was the bar. So there's a pool table, a ping pong table, or beer pong table, I guess would be a more accurate description. Jukebox and the other music down there as well. And then just throughout the houses, it's a pretty open floor plan in the main floor and the basement for social gatherings. For the more rigorous events, we'd close off some of the nicer rooms on the first floor, put tables up against them so you could only look in and not actually go in and possibly cause damage.
We would hear stories all the time from alums who would come back and talk about the bands that used to play concerts at Lenrock, either up in the third floor ballroom area or out on the lawn. And that inspired us in 1992 to host the Spin Doctors on the back lawn, and probably a lot of people don't know who the Spin Doctors are anymore, but back in the day they were just breaking big, so it was quite a coup for us to have the Spin Doctors come and play lawn rock, as we called it.
Hello Ithaca, you guys ready? You sure you're ready? All right, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome from New York City, epic recording artist, the Spin Doctors.
Deltafi had a barge in the crew race, which was on BB Lake. And there were a bunch of fraternities, I don't know, maybe 15, 20 floats they were really barges, and decked up in sails and looking like Venetian gondoliers and all that kind of stuff. And we had a catapult on ours, and we would try to catapult various stuffed on top of the other barges, so we were somewhat of renegades in that activity.
Monster Party just has its genesis in the fact that Delta Phi is across the street from the cemetery, and the cemetery they'll have a lot of stones, and you know, undergraduates while they're somewhat sympathetic, they look at those stones as maybe we could use them over at our place. And if you look at our house at night and turn the lights out, and with those sharp roofs and sharp windows, it's a very it's a pretty scary looking place. And I think one year we had our engineers and architects and agricultural students busy putting together a guillotine by Arthur Gentler, in which the guillotine fell, the lights went out, and the head was at the bottom of the guillotine. It was pretty impressive. And then there was the Jim Strickler, as electrical engineer, put together a kind of an electrical box that people stepped into. An electric arc would snap and crackle, and the person would step out looking differently. Or we had the person lying on the table with a maze of mice around the stomach, and the person would be lying horizontal, and it would appear that the mice that they got from the agricultural school would be eating away at the stomach of the person on the table. And so then we had a jungle. One year we had a jungle in the living room, which we had insects and snakes kind of wandering around, and that was also a lot of fun.
We all dressed as monsters. I remember Dick Montgomery sitting underneath a card table, and there was a serving tray with a hole cut out, and all you saw was his head, and we had some blood around it. Dick was able to sit absolutely motionless as the people would parade through, the invitees to the party. We had a huge spider, probably an 8-foot diameter, legs, that came down the stairway on a wire. So as you entered the front hall, this huge spider would come down.
Junior year, there were probably half a dozen of us who lived on the third floor on the north side of the house. And you came up the stairs and turned left, and there were two rooms that were probably three of us in each of those study rooms. And in the back, behind that, towards campus, was a small bedroom. And there was a papier-mâché spider hanging from the ceiling, great big black thing, probably 10 feet across. And other fraternities would love to come down and try to steal that spider, which was quite a feat if they did. They did not succeed when I was there, but there were a couple of attempts at it. And that was somewhat standard on campus. You tried to steal the flag of some other chapter, and for us, they would try to steal the spider.
Just Haunted House. This year, the theme is the Lenrock Asylum. We usually pair with a sorority, and we put it all together. We set it up a couple days before, and then we come up with a script, and people are given roles, and everyone comes through the house.
What we would do is, because it had a reputation for being a really good, scary, haunted house, for the first couple hours we ran the haunted house, we'd have the PG version for kids. We never went to G on it. And then we'd go up to PG-13 for the later section. But we had always had students in the ag school that would go get real animal parts to help make the feasting room a little more authentic looking. And then it always concluded with a guy with a live chainsaw chasing kids out of the house. There was no blade on the chainsaw.
So what exactly is the glue that keeps a fraternity together over the years? Delta Phi runs in families. Many of us have brothers who are brothers. You heard Craig Fanning speak of being dirty rushed by his older brother, Jim. And that was my brother, Leonard, talking about guarding the spider. There's also a tradition of fathers and sons in the fraternity, beginning with George Tarbell, who helped us purchase Lenrock, and his son, Skyler, the association president many years later.
My father, Henry W. Jones, Jr., took those pictures in that album that he gave. Well, my father was the class of 17 War, and that meant that they graduated early and went over to France, and he spent a year in the trenches in France as a captain of the infantry. He was Tau Beta Pi at Cornell, which is the Phi Beta Kappa of engineering. He was real bright. He had some neat little songs like Corky Rathbone, his boots so squat and low, his differential drags in the snow. Little tunes like that.
Dad was in the class of 1930. His name was George Clinton Castleman, the same as mine. I'm a junior. Dad always got a little teary about Delta Phi because I think his best times were there too. That translated for me in my own experience. And I do remember my initiation there when Hell Week was, there wasn't really a week and it wasn't so much hell, but you didn't know what the future was going to be the next day or that what little torment they had in mind for you. But the final day, and I don't know if I'm supposed to talk about this or not, but the final day, we were all blindfolded, and didn't know who was there. I heard my father's voice. My father came all the way up from New Jersey, where we lived, to be at the initiation, and then he was there the next day when we were all official Delta Phis, and he was there for the lunch, and that was a very happy thing for me. And also knowing that, hearing his voice in the background, even though I was blindfolded, it was reassuring that I wasn't going to be killed.
My father, Harry Weller, was a member of the House. He matriculated at Cornell in 1939, and on December 7th, 1941, was in the music room where the piano is, and heard on the radio FDR's announcement of the attack on Pearl Harbor. That radio, although it didn't work, was there 30 years later when I was at the House. He always remembers telling me that story. The House always meant a lot to him. I still have one of the old tradition that had faded before I got to Lenrock was everybody got a mug with the insignia of Delta Phi on it, the cross, and I still have that mug. I guess tradition was when my father died, I was supposed to smash the bottom of the mug, but I couldn't make myself do it, and I still occasionally use that mug to this day.
With the help of your devotion and generosity, Lenrock will continue to prosper for another 100 years as the home of Delta Phi at Cornell. No one can speak to this better than Brother Art Gensler, a well-known architect and a major benefactor of our chapter.
I've been known by all the Cornellians as Goose. This is a building that really represents both Cornell as well as Delta Phi. You know, kind of a formal place, but a lot of fun. And we really respect it. And I think it gave us a sense of because it was so quality, it gave us a sense of respect for the building, and something that as an architect I've learned that if you do something well, it carries over to the way people use it. It's important to give back in life anyway. It's in give back, this is a perfect opportunity to give back something that gave you an awful lot.
Just as the alumni assured me that they'd give financial support to me and to the fraternity when I was an undergraduate, I feel it's important to give back and help contribute and build a foundation for the future.
This is a really critical time. Things that just have to be done or we'll lose this building. And it's not fair for Cornell. It's clearly not for history of Delta Phi, that we've got a building that ought to be preserved and kept.
You know, to continue the house, to continue to grow, we have to keep the house up to the kind of the luster that it makes it unique, that it is the house of Ezra Cornell.
I think the legacy of Lenrock is so deeply entwined with the legacy of Delta Phi that you have to support one if you believe in the other.
And so I ask all of my fellow Delts to reach in their pockets much deeper than they have and really contribute. And I think in the end, we'll all have done something both positive and also something that we can look back and say, I'm glad I did that.
I encourage the brothers to come back to see the terrific improvements that have been made to the house, the beauty of the house, the way it was and how little changed it is, and to see the quality of the brothers that are living in the house that are going through the same years like they did, and to be, I think, outstanding graduates.
If you come back now, I think you'll be very pleased with what you see. So please come back. See you there.
We look forward to the weekend of September 23rd through 25th when we gather at Lenrock to celebrate a century of Delta Phi's stewardship. Please join us.